Donald Trump was caught on a hot mic in 2005 bragging in vulgar language about kissing, groping, and trying to have sex with a married woman.
I did try. I moved on her very heavily. In fact, I took her out furniture shopping. She wanted to get some furniture. I said, I'll show you where they have some nice furniture.
It happened on board a bus in a conversation with Today Show co-host Billy Bush. As the bus pulls into a TV studio to film a guest appearance on Days of Our Lives, Trump and Bush notice soap actress Arianna Zucker.
I gotta use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab him by the can do anything.
Trump is now issuing a rare apology, saying, this was locker room banter, a private conversation that took place many years ago. Bill Clinton has said far worse to me on the golf course. Not even close. I apologize if anyone was offended.
Well, but I hear men talk about that same way all the time. It was locker room talk, and nobody anticipated a punk being around to disclose man talk. And I had a former mother-in-law who ran a beauty salon, and I'll tell you, from the occasions I had to sit in there and run errands for her, looky here, women talk worse about these things than guys do.
Yes, they do.
You know he's a real man, and he admits what he says rather than like these punks on a Democratic plantation who go around trying to lie that they don't say that. They talk about black folk badly when they get drunk and get to sipping their red wine, nibbling on cheese and crackers and all such. Well, they get to talking about us pretty badly, too.
You know what's interesting? There's a big hypocrisy. You've got men having heart attacks to take Viagra. One of them, who I really like, Isaac Hayes, men taking Viagra so they can have a big enough thing for women to grab, as if women never grabbed a man's, okay? So people touch each other when they're consenting adults. They touch body parts. It's all about touching. I wouldn't be here if my father hadn't touched my mother's vagina. I'm so glad he did. So if they're two consenting adults and nobody's come forward to charge dude with rape, get off the man's case. All these women that are on Oprah's show talking this crap about the men not talking to them and never getting phone calls, and you have a man that's grabbing women, giving it to them, they should give him a medal. Shut up, feminists. It's interesting that we can have this guy booty check. Pete, this racist booty check guy who grabs a man's penis, his lover, and he's running for president and everybody thinks that's cool. They have played with that man's name the whole time because if he's gay and his name is booty check, he'd be the laughing stock that we have a president booty check. And his booty is in check, and it's not by a woman. This is amazing. A racist dude with a name that tells you that he's got a challenge. Booty check. Tell him I said it. Booty judge. Or is he judging booty? I mean, it's just no. Come on, you can't make this up. That the guy's got booty in his name. He's gay, and he's running for president. And Obama secretly backs him.
I was just going to say I judge people by their actions. And number 44, by his actions, looks like he is right in Buttigieg's lap, sitting on it. I ain't had one stuck in my behind, and the only way they're going to do that is I'll be dead and somebody's in the necrophilia.
There it goes again. Judge Joe Brown can't do a segment without attacking an important part of our community, a part of our social fabric, because he believes that he has to be in another life before he can enjoy intimacy with people of the same sex. I think he's narrow-minded. However, if he wants to give his body to sexual science, I believe Harvey Weinstein and I can find someone who could do something with his corpse, and perhaps in the afterlife, he could experience it. I believe that nobody should pass through life not knowing what the other side of the bed is like. It's like white people listening to black music. It's just that simple. You know, we've come a long way as a society. I've done everything I could to make people admire two men humping on each other the same way a man and woman. And you get this senior figure, someone that we respected, someone that we let in our homes through our television, Judge Joe Brown. And he gets in and he spews sexual hatred. This is something that we can't afford in America. No, we just want everybody to just, for one day, just call yourself trans, to show the power of this community to this difficult person named Judge Joe Brown.
Radio, DJ.
One nation, one station.
This show is sponsored by myoliveleaf.biz, myoliveleaf.biz.
And Top of the Food Chain Films at blackwhiteandbluefilm.com. Again, that's blackwhiteandbluefilm.com.
Hey guys, you're listening to the voice of Valerie Denise Jones. Let's jump right in because we got a lot of things to unpack. So I want to first start out by saying thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to spend some time with me. I appreciate you so much. Speaking of more things that I appreciate, a big shout out to Iceberg Mac. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for your support. I see what you did, and I wanted to send you a big cyber hug and thank you. All right, guys, this was a tough edit for me because real versus fake allegations are a serious concern, so I am going to need your help. I need to meet you down in the comment section or the chat room because this one is a big one, all right? Don't leave all the heavy lifting to me. Let's do this together. All right, let's get started.
The judge at Harvey Weinstein's trial threatened to jail him today. Weinstein came to court with four cell phones in his pocket. The judge saw him texting and lashed out, telling him, "I don't care who you are." Weinstein's defense attorney apologized, but the judge snapped back, "I don't want an apology. I want compliance." What were you doing with the cell phones in the courtroom today?
Jury selection began today with a pool of 2,000 men and women. They were given this 16-page questionnaire, including, "This case has been widely publicized. Will you assure all parties you will determine this case based only on the evidence?" Jury consultant Jill Huntley Taylor.
If he can get one woman who can find for him or kind of hold strong for him, that would be his ideal, because a woman is going to be a leader on this jury. Because of their experiences, and men will often defer to women in cases of sexual assault or rape.
The judge also revealed that actresses Charlize Theron, Selma Hayek, Rosie Perez, and Annabella Shura are among potential witnesses. Meanwhile, new questions are being raised about that walker Weinstein is using. Criminal defense attorney Stacey Schneider.
A lot of people think it's for show.
The walker looks like a prop. He was spotted in the Target store the day after he first used the walker publicly without the walker.
Star Charlize Theron should be banned from the courtroom and prosecuted for 3 separate instances of child abuse, considering what that charlatan witch has done to those 3 black boys, turning them into girls.
Absolutely.
And they also requested that Gloria Aldred be banned from coming in the courtroom. And I would grant that because she is too inflammatory. She is too prone to opening her mouth and attempting to influence outsiders and those people in the jury pool and turning the whole thing into an example of mob justice.
Yes, sir.
I'm hoping, even though I don't like Harvey Weinstein, I'm hoping this judge has enough strength to keep that circus from developing that the judge freely allowed and encouraged during the Cosby trial.
And I got a sidebar. I bet you he was looking at porn on his phone. That's why he couldn't put him down. His nasty self.
That's one thing, but I think what's going on, and he's trying to keep maintaining his getaway status, you know, like, hey, this is what's going on. Can you help me out here? But no, not really.
Yeah, yes.
But
you know.
Yes, the thing give me another flesh picture. I'm bored.
The thing of it is we have to understand that you cannot allow your personal opinion of somebody to influence this thing called justice. Because if you let it do that, then what happens is you set a precedent where somebody you like and respect can have it used against them. And black people throughout this country's history, well, not throughout his country's history, but since the Civil War have been victimized by partial justice. In other words, it's not impartial. It's allowed to deviate from its requirements when the person who's on trial or whose interests are to be considered is an unpopular person. So I'm saying Weinstein is something that, based on the allegations, the average person would find detestable. But on the other hand, there is the Bill of Rights that you want upheld, so encourage them to be upheld. So if they get a conviction, they do it in the guise of due process of law and justice, not a witch hunt. We do not want implementation of witch hunts, and these charlatan idiots on the far left are encouraging mob justice. It is not good for this country, and it is particularly bad for black people.
Right.
Now,
I concur.
Got a little dramatic 100%. With that. But, you know, it's a serious thing.
No. You need to get dramatic because we're in a very tight situation. We're looking at cases, whether it is the president, where they don't have anything to impeach him with. If we were to get another person in high place, if you can just make up, you can have phantom evidence against anyone that you hate, and everybody hates us, then you establish a precedent for just destroying people because they exist. We're already in bad shape. There's very little justice as it is, but if you can take white men down, and they just get stripped of everything because someone doesn't like them, there's no hope for us. None. But let's see if they convict him. You know, he's going to get that George Zimmerman treatment. He's going to get that woman that shot Bronfman John treatment. You know, come on, and forgive me. And I always say to people, I have significant Jewish ancestry, so I'm going to get in trouble. He's in New York. He is not going to get the hammer dropped on him, okay? He has Mossad and all these other people. He's probably friends with Bibi Netanyahu and everyone else. Rahm Emanuel's brother, Ari Emanuel, that runs the Democratic Party by raising money in Democratic New York. If Bloomberg really wants to be president, he better weigh in too. They better go light on him. They let him pay off his people $45 million, and he doesn't even have to admit to guilt. They're setting the way to let you know that he's going to get off with the song. You remember that song by Rodgers and Hart, Without a Song? A man's no good, no how. They're letting him off with the song. I believe that. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to pick, but you know what I'm saying, Judge? There's so many of our key judges and prosecutors and magistrates are in the tribe. I'm not picking, I'm just saying. And Judge, am I lying that there's a strong number of people in our Judeo-Christian sector that are in the court system, the lawyers on all around? Why would you crucify one of your own? Putting him on trial is like when they do an internal investigation of Pimps Anonymous. Do you really think the pimps would convict one another? When the CIA does an internal, when the cops kill someone and they do an internal investigation, that's what this is. How can they punish him?
Let me say this real quick. See, white folk have this thing about going off code. When you go off code, you become an embarrassment, and you get made an example of, so other people say, well, you know, you can do things, but you got to stay on code when you do it. If you don't stay on code, you get jacked. And I think that's what's going to happen here. Weinstein is going to be made an example of.
But not a complete. They're going to still give him a kind of a break. They're not going to Cosby him. They're not going to take his awards away. They're not going to do that. I don't believe that. I believe, like Bernie Madoff, he has to be made an example. But if most of the victims were goys and shiksas, it's not going to be as bad. Now, if he was ripping up important family people like Madoff did, then yes, the full book, the whole library, the library shelf would be thrown at him. He's going to get a break somehow. I believe this, and I'm not even complaining. I'm just saying to you, I can get it. If he's been good, if he's given to the right institutions and philanthropy and all this stuff for years, it would be very hard for them to just do it to him like they would do it to, say, Bill.
See, Weinstein will probably get convicted, but he might get some appellate relief, unlike the situation with Mr. Cosby. By the way, the show ain't over yet on that one. And he may get some appellate relief in terms of the old prosecution being declared illegal. Now, if you got some Trump appointees who get it on a federal habeas corpus, I think he'll get some relief. Not otherwise, because too many of the Democratic Party people are deep off into political correctness. The problem with that, unlike with Weinstein, was that DA's office granted Mr. Cosby immunity from prosecution to get him to agree to giving that statement, a deposition that the new prosecutor used as evidence in chief. That never should have been admitted. And it was grossly prejudicial.
And he campaigned. He campaigned on going after Bill Cosby. He did a poll, and he found out the only way he could win is to go after Bill Cosby. So the last month of his election, he went after, promised to knife Bill Cosby, and he won. This wasn't even about justice. It's politically motivated. In fact, this man, back in 2017, he and that woman that looks like Dr. Spock with the Don Cornelius blowout kit, they were both in the courts fighting to get their records sealed so the juries and other people couldn't see that these people weren't for real, that they had something to hide, that it was a fraud. I talked to the prosecutor in Montgomery County who campaigned on he was going to lock down Bill Cosby to get the racist white vote to go to him because he was behind in the polls. I don't remember his name, but it's a fact. They can Google it. These people have computers. This information is at your fingertips. Folks like Judge and I might have to remember a million names to make a point. Go and look it up. There was an election before they brought charges against Bill Cosby. Who was the prosecutor that won? And as for the woman, Andrea Constant, she was Jewish, by the way. And Montgomery County has a very powerful Jewish community. Okay, even though they didn't believe it, he was a goy who messed with one of the daughters of Israel, and he had to pay for it, even if they don't believe her. Remember Michael Jackson had to pay the money to that boy, Evan Chandler? And nobody explains to people that Evan Chandler is Jewish. Even though Michael didn't poke the kid, he still had to pay. That when you get these cases...
Michael was a pervert. He admitted to being a pervert with that speech under the black umbrella in the rain. He said he didn't see anything wrong with a grown man being naked in the bed with a 10-year-old child, not his relative, if he was showing love. There's a difference. You didn't have a conviction. You couldn't get a conviction, and there's no beyond a reasonable doubt the moral certainty, but it's just like, did Al Capone get anybody bumped off on the Valentine's Day massacre in Chicago?
Sure,
yeah, he did, but you couldn't prove it. It's two different things. With that distinction, you're right on point, Doctor. One thing you just pointed out, I think we need to get away from naming names, and we tend to get fixated on who the person is by name rather than getting into the details of what they did. So people compete to see who can drop the most names rather than understanding, comprehending and fitting into the pattern, all of the details.
Judge, wouldn't it behoove us to name names if they are powerful, influential people and or are running for office?
If he's the slime that got the DA's office on that trial, then name him, because I consider that slimy to violate the public trust by doing something like that, which is absolutely shameful, because you represent the people, and to betray the Bill of Rights, the Fifth Amendment, like that is disgraceful for a lawyer. He knew good and damn well that it was supposed to be, and the old system needs to act like it understands, that it was a matter of the system, the office, saying we grant immunity so that the civil judge could go ahead and say, okay, you are hereby ordered to make this statement under oath during the deposition process. For somebody to come in and revoke the assurance of the office is a disgrace to the system. And that's exactly what happened. So you can expose that charlatan. Steele stole the office on false pretenses and a promise to obey the law. The Fifth Amendment, Fourth Amendment, freedom from search and seizure, and the freedom from self-incrimination are the two fundamental rules that make America what it possesses, or what it is when it comes to possession of some admirable characteristics. And to violate that is just inexcusable by somebody that ought to know. I consider that a disgrace. It's mob justice is what it is. And to sit there and campaign on violating the ethics of law is just absolutely inexcusable.
I need to take us backwards before we wrap here in just a bit, because I forgot to ask you about Harvey Weinstein's his cell phones. I thought they confiscated those prior to entering the courtroom.
What that's about is it's a local rule. No cell phones in the courtroom. No recording devices in the courtroom. And the reason for that is there's a court reporter running an official record. We don't want anybody to be able to take portions of what transpired and turn it into something that subverts the process by taking things or playing things or exposing things out of context. See, that's what happened with the OJ trial. That sleaze Nancy Grace had her first assignment, and she was misleading the public as to what was going on, and the public was getting things out of context. If you had been keeping up with the trial, or you were actually present for most of it in the courtroom, you'd see why the jury only spent 30 minutes before acquitting O.J. Simpson. If you listened to her and what she took out of context or lied about, you would find that, wow, it's a disgrace. O.J. got away with murder. No, he didn't. And that's not what the bottom line was. Johnny Cochran played the race card. No, he didn't. He just got a lot of black jurors who knew how lying and conniving LAPD had been during their lifetimes, and he put on a reasonable case which showed that they were trying to fake the evidence, and they didn't buy it.
Well, the LAPD plays the race card. In fact, the Thin Blue Line plays the race card all the time.
You're right, Doctor. See, one thing that the press has never brought out is four of the primary detectives on the OJ case went to prison for falsifying evidence. They had to let 128 people out of the California State Penitentiary because of that. It's called the Rampart Scandal. Ramparts, R-A-M-P-A-R-T-S, was the precinct in L.A. where this occurred. So, if you were announcing to this occurred, why don't you bring this to the light of the public?
And why did they cover up for the fact that the police used to go to O.J.'s house for orgies? They would come in there for the festivities. I mean, that's amazing to me.
I don't have any personal knowledge of that, but I do know Nicole was known amongst every major drug dealer in West Hollywood and West Los Angeles as
a drug queen, and the gay boys down on Santa Monica Boulevard in what's called the Boys Club District, they called her, in their terminology, a fag hag, which is a reasonably straight woman who hangs around with gay boys. And she was known as a source of good drugs and occasional cash. The testimony during the trial from multiple witnesses was that O.J. had caught her having sex downstairs on multiple occasions, and he got mad, but his anger was directed toward, the girls are going to see you. Why the hell don't you go deal with somebody that can least afford an apartment or a hotel? Or if you need it, ask me and I'll give you the damn money. Just don't spend it all for drugs.
And that's what the beating that they talked about. They never explained why the fighting took place. And it wasn't just sex. It was drugs, too, in front of the kids.
Yeah. And see, the other thing is about evidence. See, one thing Nancy Grace did not talk about, but what was apparent if you recorded the trial, was LAPD's security team went in there and videoed the entire premises so that they could verify or debunk any claims by the homeowner that Los Angeles Police Department personnel had stolen property. Well, they did. That's how O.J. got in trouble the second time, which was they had his autographed pictures and Super Bowl rings and stuff they'd taken out of the house. But aside from that, there is a scene at 1:14 a.m. in this video that shows the foot of the bed. There are no bloody socks. You get a clear, well-lit view. About 20 minutes later, you hear on the audio portion, excuse me, who are you? And you can hear somebody talking in the background, and the guy says, well, Officer Furr, you have to leave. Okay, and you say, it's Furman, not Furr. All right, Officer Furman, you have to leave. About 5 minutes later on the clock, you hear, Officer Furman, we ask you politely to leave. You must go. And you pan the see the camera pan around, and where is Furman standing? At the foot of the bed where the bloody socks were found. Half hour later, when they come through with crime scene videoing the exact same scene, you see bloody socks. Before that, you saw Furman standing there after being told to get out. And 20 minutes before that, you saw no bloody socks. So OJ's out of town. How'd the bloody socks get there?
And you know what else, Doc, that they need to deal with is the blood that Van Adder sprinkled in the house and the blood that they got in the Bronco. This blood had toxic blood preservative inside of it. No human being can exist with that blood preservative in their bloodstream. It would kill them.
It's worse than that, Doc. What they caught was on camera, they caught the Asian crime lab employee who was in charge of it with the serological samples in his hand.
Right.
Coming back to the crime scene and to OJ's house, 20-some miles from downtown L.A., and he couldn't explain why he had them in his hand going into these locations. They had him
right
on video, and he said he thought he just, if he thought back, he said probably because they forgot to deposit them and brought them out by accident.
Oh,
sure. Why did you take them inside the crime?
No. Fong,
that's why
I remember Schenck was the one that busted him. The Jewish attorney did a good job.
Well, they had a team.
I remember this all these years. Schenck smashed him. But again, what they didn't really bring up was that blood preservative. What you have
to say. But I mean, all of that. They brought that up, but I'm just saying Nancy Grace didn't even touch it.
Nancy Grace looked like Big Bird with clothes on.
Yeah, well, look here. I got a tour given to me by the administrative law judge for L.A. County Superior Court. I saw the photographic evidence in the evidence room. Nicole and Rod Goldman had their throats slit from ear to ear and you could see the plier marks where pliers had been used to pull their tongues out of the cut throats. That's called a Colombian necktie. The other thing was
right.
there wasn't the bleeding you would associate with doing that because they were already dead. And they each got knifed by somebody that was left-handed that with one thrust took out their aorta in the top two chambers of their heart. Most of the time when people get stabbed, the first stab won't, even if fatal, doesn't do anything that makes the assailant go, hell, this is Superman, nothing happens, and he stabs him 10, 15, 20, 30 more times until he sees some results. So in this case, it was a professional, left-handed. I happen to be personally acquainted with one person that the state called as a witness on knife killing. He looked at the evidence. He said, this is at least two people. Let me see the crime scene stuff. And he looked at the area, which was covered in blood, with two sets of footprints. One was a size 9, and one was a size 10.5, and O.J. Ware is a 12. Those gloves, the guy that made the gloves was a guy named Richard Zuckerwar. He says these were a size L, size large. That's the size listed. Well, he took a tracing of a number of people's hands. O.J. didn't have a size L. He didn't have an XL. He wore a 2XL. And guess who? Furman had a size L. Furman was the one that found the gloves 75 feet inside O.J.'s yard, in deep shadow, in total darkness, under a foot of leaves. So, and the other thing, the serological evidence, they analyzed O.J.'s blood. They did a DNA analysis. They had a pattern chart. And Darden and Clark were trying to say this was O.J.'s blood, but their third witness, who was the instructor for the first two, said, no, this is not O.J.'s. This is O.J.'s known serological sample. You can see it fits the pattern of exactly. This doesn't fit the pattern. This, and he was, Darden and Clark jumped up and down acting fools, objecting, but Ito overruled them, allowed the defense to continue its cross-examination, and they got the opinion of the doctor that there were 96,000 people in the L.A. County area who could have donated the sample that they were looking at. Also, it was interesting, they said that the donor of this sample had ancestry that indicated that their people came from either the northeast portion of the Mediterranean or, interestingly enough, Sicily. So, testifying remotely with their face in shadow and voice disguised were two individuals who said they were of Sicilian ancestry. They were in the Federal Witness Protection Program, and they assumed that Nicole was killed as a warning to them because they dated two of her sisters. So, you know, all of that's in the record. That didn't take the jury anything but a half hour. Did you hear anything that indicated guilt? No? Well, you know, let's have a cup of coffee and let's, who's going to be the foreman? I will. Okay, everybody okay with that? Fine. All right, you write it up. You know, what's the verdict? Not guilty. So let's have a cup of coffee before we knock on the door and tell them, you know, oh, we got one. So that's what they did. And Nancy Grace put it out that it was just horrible, a miscarriage of justice. I taped every single scrap of that in my chambers when I was a state judge. I was a bachelor, so I wasn't rushing home to anybody, and I didn't feel like being bothered with rush hour traffic. So I'd listen to all of it before I went home every evening. And there was nothing in that record that even remotely established probable cause. Everything in that record showed probable cause that Furman committed the crime. There was nothing that even remotely connected O.J. It was all a bunch of smoke and mirrors nonsense. They got Darden and Clark, who were used to the defendants rolling over and taking a dive and them running right over them roughshod. They finally got a legal defense team that was competent, and they didn't know what the hell they were doing. In fact, their performance was an embarrassment to the legal profession. I take that,
And when I used to act as an adjunct professor at Memphis State Law School, I would show classes these recordings is how not to do it. So, I mean, it was just incompetent prosecution. It was a lack of credibility by the police department. The evidence showed that O.J. The evidence proved he didn't do it, matter of fact. And O.J.'s lawyer, chief lawyer, Johnny Cochran, say it was a rush to judgment. And it showed the perfidy of Nancy Grace, who is a sleaze. So, I mean, there's not to say that the same elements did not take place with the Bill Cosby thing. I don't know. I didn't get a chance to go through their whole record and see what was in the evidence room because I don't know anybody from there. All right? But it surely sounded to me like mob justice, and I was embarrassed by it. Now, with Weinstein, if he did it, I hope they kick his behind. It is hideous what he did, but it's typical. It matches what I was exposed to in Hollywood about how loose they are with the truth, how low down and backstabbing they are, how remote they are from the concepts of dignity and honesty and veracity and fair dealing. They stab you in the back and then want to grin in your face and talk smack when they sip wine and nibble on crackers and cheese. Oh, it's like they do, let me speak from personal experience briefly. It's like why they keep getting back into Dr. King and coming up with that mythology that James Earl Ray shot him when there's not a scintilla of evidence in that old damn record that he did. The only thing that the state was hanging his hat on was not Ray's confession, but his willingness to plead guilty so that he could avoid the death penalty. And because they supposedly had a rifle that hooked him up. But the truth of the matter is the FBI, who took a dive on the whole thing, claimed they could not identify Ray's rifle as being the murder weapon. So what did they have? Nothing. And as a matter of fact, the FBI actually supplied the murder weapon and the ammunition, and the shot came from the fire station, not the bushes and not the flop house. And it was a two-man hit team. And I have the serial number of the murder weapon. All kinds of things are put up because they make an interesting story and they match the history that is out there. And a lot of this history is bogus. I have been enough places, actually been an eyewitness to what went on and then heard what the media said about it later to know you can't rely on that. And a lot of it is fabricated.
I definitely want to piggyback on the idea of fabrication because the goal today is to differentiate betwixt real and false. So we really, really need to tighten the reins and really hone in on today's message before we run out of time. So can we now discuss the fact that the actress Lupita, was featured as one of Harvey Weinstein's accusers when it was stated otherwise in the news?
I thought Lupita tried to duck him and didn't go for it. At least that's what was put out on television. She said that she didn't go in his room. She wasn't willing to meet with him the way that he wanted to meet her. Now that he's in trouble, maybe she can come forward. But initially, it didn't happen to her. Now, what I want to say to that is I understand why, but there are a lot of women that are punks because it takes a lot of courage to come forward around sexual stuff, although women lie about it. But when it's real and it's a powerful man or man with influence, women have to think about what they're going to give up. Do they want justice and understand that they may miss something? So Lupita may have taken the position that many women take, that I'm really not trying to go down for fight over this, even though I hate it, it was humiliating, it was wrong. Not at this time. You get me. And they almost have to have a clear shot of knowing that they're not going to be retaliated against. That says something also about the society. But at the same time, like that young woman in the Bronx that claimed that men picked her up, until we also have serious punishment for false accusation by women, which matches backing women up when they come forward, we're going to have a problem. Because judge told you someone tried to set him up. I know what it's like to be accused 3-4 times. People I haven't even put my hands on or touched or tried to date. And there is a system that basically rewards people. If they go after moderate or low income or black men, anyone can accuse us. And serially guilty white men or powerful, powerful black men get a break. And it's a very selective process, typically, and who will be informed on who cracked the joke that the ladies found offensive that gets fired. We have a lot of confusion around this, and a lot of it comes from ladies being two-faced. So when a woman comes out and says, I've been raped, and they round up all the men, and it turns out it's a lie, she should do a couple years. Because there are women who do need the protection, the intervention from the state and law enforcement, who sometimes, if not oftentimes, don't get it. But any woman that would game the system, would pervert the system and play a game with someone, she's a criminal first class. And she's a criminal against women as well as a criminal against men. And there are a whole bunch of folks out there. I went to school with a young white woman who had rape fantasies with black men. Black men, we weren't interested in her. This, I'm telling you, this woman looked like a Cabbage Patch doll with a gap in her tooth. Why would you want her, you know? And because we ignored her, she reported us for raping her. And if I weren't smart, I'd probably be in jail now for a person with no DNA, no touching, no scratch, nothing. Just because she wanted us to do it. And these people need to go to jail. Black, white, polka dot, extraterrestrial for lying on men because women do too lie about this sex stuff. Not all, but some. And they need to be dealt with the same way a rapist or a pedophile that's male. And the women that are predators and pedophiles, they need to go to jail. Stop treating when women commit a sex crime like, oh, well, she, you know, she had postpartum depression. That's why she messes with little kids. I hate feminism. I hate double standards. Everybody get treated the same. If you're wrong, you're a woman. Throw in the slammer if she's messed with the kid. And that really complicates this. And even in the case of, say, domestic violence, they make this seem as if it's just male on female when there are plenty of violent women that hit men. And there are plenty of gay folk that beat each other. Lesbian women be knock 'em, rock 'em, sock 'em robots. If they would have locked them up in proportion to the beating that they do, the jails would be full of women for beating one another. And then, you know, she could say a man did something, they'd go to his job, handcuff him, throw him in jail because she said two women have more black eyes than a bag of peas, and they'll call it crisscross and say, y'all don't want us to take y'all both in, and they say, okay. We really need to innovate and update our laws because a lot of stuff has changed since the foundation of many of the laws that are written down to protect the rights of women and children. And actually, we need some laws to protect men. Do y'all know that, what's her name, Anita Hill used to threaten Clarence Thomas and say, if you don't do this, I'm going to claim sexual harassment. Folks don't talk about that. And I'm not saying Clarence Thomas is an angel. And folks aren't honest that, what's her name, Anita Hill used to go out with Clarence Thomas. And he dumped her for a light-skinned bisexual woman who wrote a book about it. I forget her name, but you'll find a Google, look it up. Clarence Thomas had a girlfriend. I think her book came out in 2011. She was a black lawyer who was into all kinds of freaky stuff. And Clarence Thomas dumped Anita for this high yellow girl from D.C. And that's part of why Anita Bryant's mad. So even some of that, sometimes they need to make certain that these people are in the right mental state before they can file charges. They need to go in and see someone and, you know, debrief it.
Hold on. I disagree with you on Anita Hill. I met the woman and I talked to her on several occasions for several hours. And she was a conscientious woman, and everything she said about Clarence Thomas I'd been exposed to from him from having to deal with that conniving
bastard, with due respect to his honor, from when he got recruited at Yale Law School and under the minority admissions program they had, affirmative action. He was literally the last person they admitted that year. He was not supposed to be able to flunk out of a prestigious law school because they say if you flunk out, it's our mistake, not yours. But he did, so they sent him around the country to talk against affirmative action for that whole summer, and a right-wing professor said, oh, I made a mistake. It wasn't an F. It was actually a B that he got. And he did that for every summer he was in law school, and he kind of tried to wreck affirmative action. Then they put him in a state attorney general's office in a state where you didn't have to pass the, you didn't have to pass the bar if you graduated from Yale. And then after he was there, the Reagan administration appointed him directly from that point to head EEOC, something he had no experience in. He was the hatchet man to destroy the thing. That's where Anita Hill met him. And she told me, she said, look, I missed the 60s and the movement, and I was upset. But when I got offered a job at EEOC, I thought I could be part of the movement again and make a difference. I found this character was everything against black people you could manage to be. He hated himself. He hated his black people. And what she told me dovetailed with what we already knew about him from having to deal with him all across the country as he tried to destroy black admissions programs to major colleges and universities.
I don't disagree with you at one point.
I said what her motivation was. And she told, look here. She told some things she testified to, and I just happened to be in D.C. with some people, and we were sitting at a table, and he was at the table behind us. And guess what? This was before the Anita Hill moment. He was talking with the people at the table about the same thing she accused him of. He was loud about the whole thing. He was full of that sauce. And that's what he was talking about. I said, you know what? I heard him say the same thing out of his own mouth. And I'm not mentioning it because it's on TV that somebody, or radio that somebody who is a minor may listen to. She said, look, when they came to me for background checks, when he was going on the Court of Appeals, the Second Circuit, I said, I'm not going to say anything because he can't do that much damage there. And when he got sworn in, that was the first time he had ever been in a courtroom. He'd never been in one before, but they made him an appellate justice. The next thing that came up was when they came and said, we'd like to talk to you about him being nominated for Supreme Court. She said, Judge, talking to me, she said, the first thing I did was, never mind, I don't have anything. Then she thought about it, he can do too much damage. She said, yes, I do. I don't want to say anything, but I got to say what I know. And what she told me, she told them, dovetailed in with what we already knew about him. And I think she was right on point. Now, I get your thing, but it had nothing to do with somebody going around. In fact, she said he actually falsely accused her of trying to date him. And she said, by that point, she said, I was all gung-ho about black folk. And I wasn't having anything to do with somebody who hated his people so badly. She said he tried to date everybody up in there, and he talked about it all belonged to him because he was the boss, and he spent too much time talking to us about do we want to watch porn movies with long dong silver.
Yes.
And she just said, I would never date any fool like that. That's what she told me.
The porn... Even his girlfriend, the other girlfriend, he's a freak. He's into porn. He's nasty. This we agree on. I'm not trying to, and the anti-black stuff. All of that is true. But the part that is different is they had some kind of understanding. And I think that in hindsight, like what you said for Cosby, people come back. I'm not saying he didn't do what she said, but I'm saying something went on between these people. Maybe she's just trying to be friends and he took it some other way. But
well, she said
She said she was in awe of the director of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission because she wanted to do something for her people. She said as soon as she found out what he was really about, she kept trying to distance herself. She said it didn't happen that way, and what her objection was not even so much his advances, because in the day and time that this occurred, she said he's just being a man with that. Just said he's detestable and he does not need to be on the U.S. Supreme Court being held up as a black man when that is the last thing he is. And the truth of the matter is he's a pervert. That's what she said.
That he used to go to Plato's retreat and all that stuff. This is,
well,
true.
Truth of the matter is, you know, the best man was at his last wedding. Rush Limbaugh. And he was Rush Limbaugh's best man in Rush Limbaugh's last wedding. That just gives you some idea who the person is. And I read, you know, I read all of the Supreme Court opinions, and everything he writes, his various law clerks have claimed they wrote for him because he doesn't know how to write. But everything comes out that he assigns to himself as being very biased against black folk and other minorities.
I agree.
I mean, he's really bad about it.
There's nothing that I have to say to praise. The only thing I'm saying is that...
Oh, I got what you're saying. I'm just saying in that since I had these conversations with the woman, I have to offer a little deal.
That's okay. I'm not mad at you. The porn is real. Him going to sex resorts is real. The fact that
I don't
piece of woman. No. This lady put the book out that he hasn't sued her, and I mean, so she's put out their relationship.
Well, I mean, I don't care if somebody looks at porn or has freak in them. What I'm looking at is not that. I don't care about that. I'm just care about what you do on your job. And the thing of it is, she wasn't even mad that he tried to hit on. She was just mad about his whole arrogant attitude of the rules don't apply to him because she kept pointing stuff out.
And it went
in one ear and out the other.
The light skin
was. And it really wasn't to do with him trying to make time with her.
Now, the lady that wrote the book, she also started hating Clarence Thomas because of his hatred of black people. So they line up. I'm not trying to defend him at all. And the reason I mentioned him being into porn is that would make sense for the the body hair being on the soft drink can. That's sort of, it makes sense. If that, I can see if you, that's where you are, that's where you are.
One thing, but you have to remember, she didn't bring that up. That came out as a result of her being questioned.
See,
this woman impressed me. I'm a pretty good judge of people. And having some face-to-face conversation with her at a conference in D.C. over the course of several hours, over several days, however it worked out, I tend to kind of believe her, and I already knew what type of person Thomas was, so it dovetailed into the opinion that I'd made up over the years before he even got to the point of being nominated for the Supreme Court. See, I used to work for EEOC back 1975 or so, and I know what the agency was, and I know what it became after he was there when he acted as the hatchet man for the Reagan administration.
Can I ask you a question about the EEOC?
Yes, sir.
About Eleanor Holmes Norton. Was Eleanor Holmes Norton good for the EEOC? And you haven't asked Judge about John Lewis.
John Lewis,
okay,
is an enemy of the people. He is a great friend of LGBTQ. He is against the family. He is against free speech. And he is certainly against the Second Amendment. He is against the Fifth Amendment and the Fourth Amendment. I don't appreciate that.
All right, guys, I am going to stop the edit right there. You pretty much got the gist of what transpired during the live broadcast. Guys, we have live broadcasts every Friday starting at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just call the number 929-477-1167 to join the conversation. Yes. Speaking of conversations, I told you we definitely need to meet down in the comment section. We need to meet in order to have a conversation that we will take into our churches, our homes, our schools, our communities, because guys, there is so much to digest, so many ways to get involved in order to make a difference. Speaking of those who are making a difference, guys, I have got to share with you something phenomenal. Totally phenomenal that was directed by Curtis Schoon. It is going to give you all, well, a large majority of the tools that you need to truly, truly, truly become the community activist that you were born to be. Now, this trailer that I'm about to play for you, it features Charlemagne the God, Michael Eric Dyson, Lord Jamar, Killer Mike, etc., etc., etc. What a phenomenal cast, guys. I was totally floored after watching the movie. So please make sure that you go to the website. Curtis's website is blackwhiteandbluefilm.com, blackwhiteandbluefilm.com. I'm going to play the trailer, and let me just do that. Let me do that right now.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
Trump is sort of this walking white supremacy symbol, and they see that, and they are buoyed. They're like, wow, like this is the guy who is the embodiment of what we wish we were.
Donald Trump made people comfortable with not having to be politically correct anymore.
That means white folk who want to go on with their racism, their bigotry, their sexism, their homophobia, without being challenged.
He's playing to people's fears, and he's exploiting their fears for his own political ends. And I don't even know that he believes his own rhetoric.
He's not trying to give all the jobs in Chicago to people in Tegucigalpa.
Trump is the best thing we could have because we were bamboozled by the Democrats and the Republicans. Now we see that it's a system based upon the interests of rich white men with property and power, always has been, will not change.
When you say something like, make America great again, what does that mean?
Black, white, and blue. America, this song. It's for you.
Trump is not a racist. Trump is about business. And most business people like me want a guy like him in charge.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed the trailer, guys. Let's talk. Let's talk about what you saw and then also anything else that we need to discuss down below. Got a lot of work to do, guys. The first thing I need you to do, though, is hit that like, share, subscribe button and tell a friend who will tell a friend about this platform. Please continue to tithe into this platform, guys. We need everything. We need all your resources and your prayers, your love, your support. Speaking of support, another big shout out to Iceberg Mac. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for showing love. I appreciate you so much. All right, guys, let's set in motion our 2020 goals. Let's give ourselves a full body detox, and we can do that in 7 days. Yes, I said 7 days. How do I know that? Because that's how I started my year off. I started my year off with a bottle of olive leaf extract. Now, let me tell you a little bit about olive leaf extract. Olive leaf extract successfully handles reversal of high blood pressure, diabetic high blood sugar. It's inflammatory. It's known to kill all chronic and acute infections from viruses, parasites, bacteria, yeast. It kills tumors and so much more. Also, it's been known to fight breast, prostate, colon, liver, skin cancers, and autoimmune diseases like lupus. If you don't believe me, just pick up the phone and give them a call. The number is 612-567-3263. Again, 612-567-3263. Or visit the website, myoliveleaf.biz, myoliveleaf.biz.